Baggertly Greenwoods is one of the oldest independent auditing, accounting and advisory firms in Cape Town. Focused on navigating the complexities of transactions and the intricacies of compliance, risk management and financial reporting. In this series, we will guide you through the complexities of today's business landscape. You are listening to Advisory Explained, a trusted perspective. Welcome back to another episode of Advisory Explained, the podcast where we break down complex financial topics to help you make informed business decisions. I'm your host, Kwesi Kretzinger, and today we're diving into one of the most important subjects in business finance, valuations. Valuations are critical in any business, whether you are buying, selling, raising capital, or planning for the future. Understanding how to assess the value of your company or its assets can shape major decisions that impact your growth and strategy. In today's episode, we'll focus on the three core valuation methods, namely net asset value, EBITDA multiple valuations, and discounted cash flows. We'll also look at why valuations are more than just numbers. They are strategic tools that guide everything from daily decisions to long-term planning. So let's look at why valuations are important. Firstly, valuations provide a foundation for making strategic business decisions. Whether you are deciding to buy another company, sell a division, or raise capital, understanding the true value of your business is crucial. In M&A transactions, valuations help determine a fair price for the deal. Buyers want to ensure they are not overpaying, and sellers want to get the best return for their investment. Remember, there is a massive difference between value and price. Price is what you pay, value is what you get. Valuations are also critical when businesses undergo restructuring or face legal disputes. Whether it's a company looking to streamline or settle a legal matter, knowing the value of assets is essential for making informed decisions. If you have a look at one of our other episodes where we discuss restructuring, there are certain of the restructure tools that we utilize, which incorporate a very big part of valuations. Two of these are Section 42 transactions and share buybacks, both of which have a necessity to understand and incorporate the value of the asset or the business when using that specific restructuring tool. When we go over into financial due diligence, in a due diligence, valuations aren't just about the bottom line. They are about understanding the quality of the business's cash flows. A financial due diligence forces you to have a deep look at each of the drivers in the valuation, especially cash flow health and quality. Valuations are also critical for long-term strategic planning. Valuations are more than just a number. They are strategic tools. They help guide long-term planning, capital allocation and reinvestment decisions, ensuring that the business is on the right path to growth. There's a book called Measure What Matters by John Doerr. If you consider the principle of measuring what matters, if you know your business, if you know the value drivers in your business, don't you think it's critical to have an understanding of the valuation methodology that impacts your business? Performing valuations regularly provides a clear picture of how the company is performing over time. Are we growing in value or are we losing ground? The scorecard approach helps identify which parts of the business are driving growth and which need attention. My dad once gave me a quote. I don't know who said it first, but I'll always remember my dad when he said it. So he said, "We are all equal, but some are more equal than others." Just like people, we can't measure all assets with the same measuring stick. So let's look at tangible assets versus intangible assets. Tangible assets like real estate or equipment are valued differently from intangible assets like a brand or a patent. Each type requires a different approach, suitable dependent on the asset which you are valuing. For asset-heavy companies, where physical assets like machinery and land or buildings or inventory are the primary drivers of value, a net asset value is an appropriate method to value these assets or the company. It accounts for the assets and liabilities in determining the company's value based on its tangible asset holdings. Service-based businesses are generally valued based on their ability to generate cash flows rather than physical assets. So for service-based businesses, we'll most probably rather look at a multiple valuation or a DCF, a discounted free cash flow. Tech companies often don't have many physical assets, but depend heavily on intellectual property or potential for future growth. For startups, traditional valuation methods may not apply, especially if they are pre-revenue. Therefore, it is crucial to understand the business, the asset, and the environment in which it operates. Real estate is valued differently, often through the comparable sales method, where properties are compared to similar ones in the market, or through the capitalization rates method, which focuses on rental income and property value appreciation. Intellectual property, like patents and trademarks, is often valued using the relief from royalty approach, which estimates the value based on the income the asset could generate if it were licensed out. When valuing a company's equity, very important, equity, methods like a DCF or a PE ratio, a price earnings ratio, come into play. These methods help assess the value of shares, which is critical in investment decisions or mergers. Remember, certain valuation methods value the enterprise, therefore they are valuing the business, and other methods are used to value the equity. So what is the shares worth and not necessarily the business worth? Those are two critical concepts which you need to understand when applying different valuation methodologies. So let's look at the net asset value or the NAV valuation methodology. The main question that we need to ask before we even look at how to calculate it is, what does the NAV really tell us? And why would we use this method to value a company? The basic thought process behind NAV is to look at the company from a liquidation perspective. If the company had to sell all its assets today and settle all its liabilities, how much would be left for the owners or the shareholders? NAV helps to answer that question by focusing on the company's tangible physical assets, its buildings, machineries, land, inventory, etc. It's about understanding the net worth of a company after everything is settled. This method is particularly useful for companies where most of the value lies in the physical assets, like real estate or manufacturing. You want to know, if we sold everything off today, what is the value that we would have left over? So the basic formula is assets less liabilities. Think your balance sheet. However, certain assets are worth more than what they are carried on your balance sheet. That's where we come in and we do a fair value adjustment on these assets. That is, asset is worth 30 million, you purchased it for 20 million, so there is a 10 million fair value adjustment which should be added. So it's adjustment to your equity. If we make value adjustments to equity, especially fair value adjustments, we need to consider accounting wise, are there any liabilities that would arise from this additional value that is realized. Now, we have to consider two things, accounting and tax. And where these two meet is a thing called deferred tax, especially on fair value adjustments. So deferred tax is an accounting principle which states that if I expect to receive this fair value adjustment in the future, there will be a tax liability which I would need to pay when I realize that. And my deferred tax adjustment is essentially an accounting principle of bringing the deferred tax into account now for the future liability. So that is absolutely crucial, which needs to be taken into account. So then we get to something that's called the adjusted equity, so adjusted net asset value. That is your normal equity plus fair value adjustments less your deferred tax adjustments gets you to an adjusted net asset value. But then we need to ask the next question. From whose perspective are we doing this valuation? If the perspective is the shareholder, who is an individual, person like me and you, or a trust, there is a separate liability which needs to be taken into account before the distribution. Remember, the net asset value methodology says we're selling all the assets in the company, we're paying off all the liabilities in the company, and then the company does a distribution to the shareholders. That distribution, by its real name, is called a dividend. So individuals and trusts, they pay 20% dividend withholding tax on all dividends which they receive from South African companies. So consideration needs to be taken into account if we should possibly adjust that adjusted net asset value even further with a dividend withholding tax before we get to the realization value. And what is the realization value? That is the value that will be distributed to the individual, the trust, or the company, the shareholder, at the end of the NAV valuation. So, therefore, NAV operates under the assumption that the business will liquidate its assets, pay off any liabilities, and then distribute what's left to shareholders. It's a method that focuses on the company's tangible net worth in a sale or winding up scenario. The next valuation methodology that I want to discuss and just quickly touch on is called the EBITDA multiple valuation. Once again, let's ask the main question. Why do we use EBITDA multiples to value companies? What is the underlying thought process behind this method? We want to understand the company's true operational profitability, its ability to generate earnings without the influence of financing decisions, taxes, and accounting practices. EBITDA focuses solely on the company's core operations, stripping out things like interest, depreciation, and tax effects, which can vary widely across different companies and distort the comparison. By applying a multiple to EBITDA, we are essentially asking, how much value does this business generate based on its earnings potential compared to similar businesses in the same industry? The multiple itself reflects how much investors are willing to pay for each unit of EBITDA based on the market conditions and industry trends. This method is particularly useful for comparing businesses with different financing structures but similar operational capabilities. So what is EBITDA? EBITDA is often called a clean measure of profitability because it removes non-operational factors. It helps us to understand how well the business performs from its core operations without being influenced by its financing decisions or tax structures. EBITDA multiples are particularly useful for companies with heavy capital investments like infrastructure or manufacturing. where large non-operational expenses can distort profit figures. It gives a clearer picture of true operating performance. It's important to note that EBITDA multiples vary by industry. A tech company might have a higher multiple because of high growth expectations, while a manufacturing company might have a lower one due to capital intensity. Before applying an EBITDA multiple, we often make adjustments to the EBITDA to get a normalized figure that says, what is my sustainable earnings essentially? This removes off irregular items that don't reflect the company's true operational performance, such as restructuring costs, legal settlements, or extraordinary gains and losses. Examples of these are one-time expenses like lawsuits, restructuring costs, major repairs, etc., etc. One-time incomes like selling off a major asset, or owner-related expenses. We know a lot of companies are used almost as a bank for some of the owners if it's owner-operated businesses, where a lot of their personal expenses are put through the companies. So we need to adjust for that, because obviously when someone else buys the business, those are expenses that won't necessarily continue. Another one of these more regular expenses that we adjust for quite regularly is management fees. If there's a holding company that charges quite a large management fee to oversee certain areas. After we've adjusted the EBITDA itself to get to a normalized sustainable earnings, we then adjust the EBITDA, the multiple itself, as well. So why do we adjust EBITDA? Adjusting EBITDA ensures that the number reflects a steady, repeatable level of earnings, which is crucial for making informed decisions about the value of the business. A normalized EBITDA helps smooth out any temporary fluctuations and irregularities. On the other hand, EBITDA multiples aren't all the same size. One size does not fit all. They need to be adjusted based on various factors, including the company's size, industry trends, growth perspectives, and even the overall risk profile. The goal is to apply the multiple that truly reflects the company's market value. For example, a technology company might have a higher multiple compared to a manufacturing company, simply because of its high growth potential and lighter capital structure. The industry plays a big role in determining the right multiple. We also adjust the multiple for company-specific factors. If a business has strong growth prospects, is a market leader, or operates in a low-risk environment, we might apply a higher multiple. On the flip side, if it has unstable cash flows or operates in a highly competitive, risky market, we adjust the multiple downward. I hope you guys can realize the importance of knowing the business, of understanding what it is that you are valuing, because it's so much more than just taking your earnings, your profits, and multiplying it by some figure you Googled to get to a value. So what are some of the adjustments that we make to the EBITDA multiple? Just high level. One is growth potential, higher multiples for companies with significant growth prospects. The risk profile, lower multiples for companies with higher risks or unstable cash flows. And market position, we adjust multiples higher for industry leaders and lower for less competitive players. So looking at the last valuation methodology that we're going to touch on today, and this is almost the big bad wolf, the big one, the difficult one, the complex one, and it's called the discounted free cash flow valuation methodology. The main question is, why would we use the discounted cash flow method to value a company? What's the core thought process behind this approach? The core idea behind DCF is to assess the future earnings potential of a company. Instead of looking only at what the business is worth today, we ask, how much cash flow will this company generate in the future? And what is that worth right now? This method is based on the belief that a company's value is really determined by its ability to generate cash over time. By forecasting these future cash flows and discounting them to their present value, we get an intrinsic valuation that reflects both the future earnings potential and the risks involved. So, high level, the steps involved in a DCF process is not that complex. There's roughly five key steps or phases. The first of which is we have to forecast the cash flows. That is one of the most difficult and important steps in the entire process. Then we calculate the terminal value, which is a mathematical equation. Then we jump into determining the discount rate, which is of utmost importance. And we'll get to that a bit later, but in essence, the reason for that, together with forecasting, is DCFs are incredibly sensitive. So any minor adjustment you make has a significant influence. And the reason for that is because we discount these figures in perpetuity over time. The fourth step is then, well, we discount the future cash flows to their present values, which is once again a mathematical calculation. And then step five is we calculate enterprise value and then equity value. If you remember a few steps earlier in the podcast, I spoke about understanding what you are valuing and the difference between enterprise value and equity value. So enterprise value is you are valuing the business. So the operations itself, the cash flows are in and out. And that the first half of a DCF is what it calculates. It gives you enterprise value. To get from enterprise value to equity value, we have to deduct all the external liabilities. We add back all the non-core assets. And to a certain extent, that includes a portion of cash and other investments that the business might have. And that gives you equity value at the end of the day. So when do we use the DCF? DCFs work best when you can reasonably predict the company's future cash flows. It's often used for companies with steady, reliable cash flow patterns. So majorly, we use this for mature businesses. It's also great for businesses with growth potential. By forecasting their future growth, the DCF captures the potential upside that the other methods might miss. Therefore, if your value is more focused on future earnings rather than today's earnings, a DCF might be applicable. DCF provides an intrinsic valuation based on the company's ability to generate cash, rather than comparing it to peers or relying on market multiples. It gives you a more detailed picture of what the company is worth on its own merits. A DCF's major strength is its ability to capture the future potential of a business, both in terms of growth and risk. It's a very detailed method that focuses on the company's fundamentals. On the flip side, DCF is highly sensitive to assumptions you make, like the discount rate or the growth projections. Small changes in these inputs can lead to big changes in the valuations. That's why DCF is less suited for volatile businesses, where predicting future cash flows accurately is difficult. I would really, really like to stress again the importance of understanding what you are valuing, understanding your business, how it operates. For example, I just had to redo a valuation for one of our clients who is looking at a potential exit. They are in the manufacturing environment, and they had an additional external party doing the first valuation, and they did a discounted free cash flow. And these external people who did the first round made an assumption that the amount of units that will be produced will keep on growing with, I think they increased it by CPI, so roughly between 4 and 6% annually with their forecasted CPIs in terms of units. And when I sat down with a client and I asked them, how far are you from max capacity in terms of units you can actually produce? And they said, Kwesi, we are at max capacity. I can't do more than what I've done in the last 2 years, and that's stayed constant. So firstly, these people didn't understand the business, and nothing against them, but they didn't do the first fundamental exercise of understanding what you are valuing. Therefore, they forecasted that this company will have 12 million additional units produced and sold at increased rates in the next 3 years, which is ridiculous because they physically can't produce that amount of units. So we've touched on roughly what is a DCF and roughly how it works. But one of the key items and areas in a DCF, which is also a widely debated topic, is the discount rate. So what is the discount rate? The discount rate helps us figure out what future cash flows are worth today. It reflects both the time value of money, how much more valuable a rand is today compared to in the future, and the risk of actually receiving those future cash flows. We use the discount rate to account for risk. Future cash flows are uncertain, and the discount rate helps us to bring those future rands into today's terms, giving us a realistic view of what the company is worth now. So what discount rate do we use? So mostly, in practice, people use a discount rate called WACC. WACC stands for Weighted Average Cost of Capital, and it reflects the company's overall cost of raising money, whether through debt or equity. It's a weighted average because it combines both sources of capital. Therefore, it weights the amount of cost in terms of your capital structure. We use WACC because it captures both the cost of debt, what the company pays in interest, and the cost of equity, the return investors expect. It ensures we are factoring in the cost of financing from both sides. So how do we then calculate WACC? Well, firstly, WACC is built up, like we just said, out of three main areas: your cost of equity, your cost of debt, and then your capital structure. The cost of equity tells us what return investors expect. Using the CAPM model, essentially, we are looking at a few different functions in the methodology on how it's calculated. We take into account what is the risk-free rate of South Africa, well, whatever country the business is in, but well, we are in South Africa, so we use a 10-year government yield bond. Then we look at the market risk premium. We take that into account. We take into account the volatility, so the beta of the company. Essentially, if the market moves with 10%, either up or down, are you moving with 12% or are you moving with 8%? Once again, we're looking at industry. And then we take into account specific risk factors for the company. And that is how we calculate the cost of equity. Cost of debt is quite straightforward. For the cost of debt, we look at the interest rate the company pays on its loans. Since interest is tax deductible, we adjust it to account for tax savings. Therefore, if you have a average interest rate on all of your loans of, let's say, 11.75%, then we deduct tax at 27% for the South African company's tax rate, and then you get roughly to 8.5% odd for your cost of debt. Now, to give you some context and scope, usually for a lot of South African companies, we end somewhere between a 21 and a 25% on cost of equity. And, well, you just heard it, roughly around 8.5% on a cost of debt. Therefore, you can see the cost of debt is significantly cheaper than the cost of equity. When we jump into the capital structure, we take into account in proportion the cost of equity and the cost of debt based on our capital structure and how much is actually financed through equity versus how much of the business is financed through debt. So finally, we combine both the cost of equity and the cost of debt to get WACC. It's weighted by how much equity and debt the company uses to fund its operations. This gives us a balanced view of the company's cost of capital. In summary, a discount rate helps bring future cash flows into today's value, accounting for risk and time. WACC reflects the blended cost of both equity and debt, providing a holistic measure of the company's cost of capital. Earlier, I mentioned a thing called the valuation scorecard. So what is it and how does it work? Valuations aren't just a one-time event for when you are buying or selling a business. They can also be used as an ongoing scorecard to measure how a company is performing over time. By regularly conducting valuations, you can track whether your strategic decisions are increasing the value of your business year after year. The valuation scorecard essentially touches on three main topics. The first is tracking year-over-year progress. That is, monitoring changes in value. What's going up and if it's going down. It helps you identify trends. Secondly, it helps you set strategic targets by using valuations to set these goals and to measure the impact of business decisions. Thirdly, refining business strategy. This is through adjusting your strategy based on a valuation methodology which is focused on your business model, which incorporates the correct value drivers. And then, obviously, to pinpoint those specific value drivers for your business. And that brings us to the end of today's episode on business valuations. I hope you now have a clearer understanding of the different methods used to assess the value of a company and why they matter. Not just for one-time transactions, but for ongoing business planning and strategy. We also looked at how valuations can serve as a scorecard to track performance over time, allowing you to set strategic goals and measure progress. Valuations aren't just numbers. They are powerful tools for understanding where your business stands and where it can go. Remember, each business is unique, and the right valuation method depends on the specific circumstances. Whether you're preparing for a merger, restructuring, or simply tracking your business progress, knowing your company's true value is essential for making informed decisions. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Kusi Kretzinger, and I look forward to guiding you through more financial and business concepts in the future episodes. Thank you for listening to Advisory Explained, a trusted perspective, a podcast by Baker Tilly Greenwoods. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and reach out to us via our website, bakertillygreenwoods.co.za.